welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page podcast. This is Jessica with a cup of coffee, lots of caffeine to talk about Insomnia, which is the new book by...
I'm Sarah Pimbra, and I am the author of Insomnia. Yes.
As you might have guessed from my intro, anybody who works with me here at the library knows that I am always caffeinated, and I actually see you're drinking something as well. Is that also something that's caffeinated?
Tea. I'm a tea addict. Yeah.
So welcome to Turn the Page podcast. We are so excited to have you here. When we saw that there was a book coming out by you, we automatically got on our friends at your publisher and was like, so how do we make this happen? And we're making it happen.
I'm so glad to be here. It's so nice to chat. The pandemic obviously has been awful, but the good thing that has come out of it is these kind of events are so much easier to do. You know, I can speak to people in America without having to get on a plane and vice versa. It's really good.
Yeah, I have to say that's been sort of something that's opened up doors in ways that we hadn't expected. So welcome once again. This book has... First of all, the cover itself is like enough to give you chills, and the book is really gripping. Would you like to let our listeners know from your own perspective, like what got you to the point where you said, okay, I'm going to write the book, and maybe talk a little bit about what it's about?
Okay. Oh my gosh, I'm so terrible at this. So Insomnia, the clue is in the title slightly, is a book about a woman called Emma, who on the surface, she kind of has it all. She's a divorce lawyer. She has a stay-at-home husband. She's got two great kids, one's 17, one's five. So, you know, there's a bit of a gap there. Nice house, everything seems to be going really well. But as with all these things, you know, her feet are pedaling at 100 miles an hour. She's paying all the bills. She's a bit tired. And as she's approaching her 40th birthday, she stops sleeping. And for Emma, this is a worry because her mother stopped sleeping before her own 40th birthday. And on the night of her 40th birthday, went mad and did something terrible. And Emma's mother always used to say the same thing was going to happen to her. And Emma's now worried that that is the case. And there's two things. Number one, I'm quite a tongue-in-cheek person. So there was a part of me that I'm going to be 50 in a week. So big birthday is looming and, you know.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So I wanted to write about these fears, these irrational fears women have of getting older. So turning 40 is always the big one, I think, and turning into your mother, which is another strange fear we have, in that until we're about 15 or so, or maybe 13, our mothers are the center of our universes, absolutely the one person we trust above all else. And then something changes, and when you're an adult, if someone says you have, unless you're very lucky with your mother, you know, most people, if someone says, oh, you sound like your mum, or you hear yourself, even worse, you hear yourself saying something your mother would say, your whole body's like, no. So it's kind of, obviously it's not a funny book, but I wanted to play with those things. And also on a more serious note, I mean, this is not a pandemic novel. There's no mention of the pandemic in it. It's not, you know, not relevant. But what is relevant is that I noticed during the pandemic, my friends who were married with jobs and with children did most of the heavy lifting in the pandemic. They were the ones that did their own job and homeschooled and still sorted the laundry and did most of the worrying. You know, men took a long time to get on board with the whole mother could die situation, you know?
Yeah.
So I could just see my friends getting tighter and tighter and sleeping less and less. And I think in the pandemic, I mean, I've always had a problem with sleep, but I think a lot of people developed a problem with sleep. So I just wanted to write about how very quickly you can go from feeling on top of the world, like two or three nights of no sleep, and your whole perspective on the world becomes almost hallucinogenic. You don't trust yourself. You don't trust anyone else.
It's funny you say that, because I have two young boys who are twins, and I really empathized a lot with Emma in that case. I'm a little bit older than her, though. I didn't 100% get a chance to really feel out that whole 40 thing, because I turned 40 and then a few months later we were all locked in, and now that everything is opening up again, I'm like, oh my God, I was 40. What does that mean? And a lot of the time that I spent in the walls, you know, with my family and my kids, and like usually yelling at them because they were going to hurt themselves in some way that just completely baffled me. I don't know what it is about like 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, but they're really, really creative and they have zero fear. So
yeah, no fear.
No fear. So the amount of times I started like, what are you doing? And then I was like, oh my God, do I sound like my mother?
There you go.
But for Emma, you know, sounding like her mother is almost like a prophecy, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Her mother keeps saying that, I believe, what was it, that she has the bad blood?
Yeah.
And she has a sister who kind of internalized trauma in a different way than Emma did. So her sister shows up and her sister is still connected to her mother. And it's just sort of this collision course of anxieties happening when there are other things happening beneath the surface that Emma is unaware are about to completely impact her life.
Yeah. I mean, I think in previous books, like Behind Her Eyes obviously was romantic relationships and obsessions and that kind of thing. And I wanted to not have that as the central premise. And I think we are all so shaped by our formative years. And we're so shaped by our families and our, you know, like I've got a sister who's very different to me. And we've got closer over the pandemic, but we're not overly close, you know, so we're quite different, but we still share a lot of similarities. And we have shared history, and we have, so with Emma and Phoebe, Phoebe's much sort of freer in a lot of ways than Emma. And Emma has decided that they do share this traumatic history with their mother, but she hasn't told her husband about it. She hasn't, you know, no one knows. They just think her mother died, even though her mother is not yet dead. But they thought her mother had died when she was a child. So in some ways, although Emma's the successful one, I mean, Phoebe, we don't know whether we trust her or not. And Phoebe's certainly got her own issues, but she's definitely on the surface wilder, but in some ways more together than Emma, you know, and I think Emma starts to feel that in herself.
And at the same time, her teenage daughter is like in that
being a teenager.
Yeah. Time where just that teenage-ness and mom is sort of not someone you can trust is really underway. But the son, her little boy, is in prime mommy is everything time. So it was just such a crazy pool of emotions. And then when Emma starts experiencing some of these things and has to really go back to the source of her trauma, which is her mother, and some of the things that came out of what happened with her mother.
Yeah.
The mystery just keeps thickening, and you know, you're really not sure whether or not you can trust her husband, the people she works with, or her.
Anybody.
Herself, nobody.
And I kind of really wanted to take that unreliable narrator to that extra step with even Emma doesn't trust herself, you know? So it's not that we don't trust her. She doesn't trust her. You know, we don't, we're seeing the world and it's entirely told through her narrative, apart from a short prologue. So, well, everything's from her viewpoint. So we're only seeing other people from her viewpoint as well. So you're like, is this just Emma, or is this person odd, or is Emma behaving oddly? And she does, you know, she does certainly behave oddly. And I think for me, that, like, when I wrote Behind Her Eyes, I wrote a five-year-old boy. I don't know why. I've never had a five-year-old boy. I don't know what my thing is. I think that's just, it's just peak cute boy age, isn't it? I think there's just something lovely.
Yeah, there really is. Although,
yeah, you've probably got a different seven. Experience from time
we're,
to time.
We're getting towards seven in less than a month, and it's still adorable. But five is really interesting, because five, I believe, they're really coming out of their shell, yeah, as far as, like, you know, they're not really a toddler anymore. There's a lot of interesting, keen observances that surprise parents. And there is just a lot of, like, I know, you know, obviously everybody's family is different. Not everybody's family has mothers, you know.
Yeah.
Some have two dads, some have, you know, but for me, being in that family where I am a mother of two boys, that age is just, you are the sun and the moon and everything to them. So, yeah.
And they're quite, an ex-boyfriend of mine had twin boys. So, like, it was, I totally get the exhaustion, because I remember just thinking, how do people do this? Everything was military, you know, because there was two of them and an older, a four-year-old and two-year-old. But I found them so much more straightforward in a lot of ways than girls. You know, if they think it, they say it. If they haven't had,
yeah, out of the gate. When I was a children's librarian, I used to say that I was much more anxious about doing a program for little kids than speaking in front of adults, because,
oh God, yeah,
adults have some restraint. Kids will just tell you whether they think your shoes are ugly, or if you have a pimple, or, yeah, if they think your voice is annoying.
Oh, I remember being at school with a friend of mine, Norma, and she wasn't even a particularly big girl, but we were walking home and we'd picked up one of her friends, a five-year-old boy, I think it was her nephew or something. And we were walking along and he went, "Norma, why are you fat?" And it was just such a straightforward question. We just looked at each other and we were like, all right, chuckles, keep it in. You know, we were laughing. It was so funny. But, you know, as an adult, you go around the houses of so much. You tell so many lies as an adult, really, in, yes, kindness lies and all sorts. Yes. As children, yes, it's so upfront. And I think with Will in the book,
yes,
I think I found him better to write after writing Adam in Behind Her Eyes, because that I had to really work on. But I think what I like about Will is when he starts to distrust his mother, and that's like it's like the worst kind of betrayal.
It was
her,
heartbreaking. It really was heartbreaking. And I really don't want to talk too much about how that manifests, because it is really something that will all fall into place once you really read the book and understand what's actually going on. But no, it was absolutely heartbreaking and very, very well written, by
Thank
the way.
You
know, I really thought there was so much in this book that was happening that it was like, I don't want to say there were a lot of red herrings, because there really weren't. There were maybe just a lot of there was a lot of scenery that was maybe a little bit more significant to Emma's mental state, but not necessarily to the specific meltdown. It just contributed, which I loved. And it really, like, it took me a little while to sort of figure out, okay, so what pieces of this are coming towards the end point? Especially when I got to it, I was like, oh, okay. But it didn't discard any of the other things that happened, because they also were significant in their own way.
Yeah, I do like everything to link in a little bit, but I do quite like, you know, I like, I don't like it when you read a book and you can, I mean, I've probably written them myself in the past, you know, we try not to, but obviously you're not always doing it well, but where you can tick off, oh yeah, bad guy dealt with, red herring dealt with, oh yeah. And sometimes they're so tenuous, the things, they're not logical. Whereas I actually think in the real world, we all have little secrets from each other. It doesn't make anybody a bad person, but from the outside looking in, that secret could look bigger until it is uncovered. You know, there's various characters that
like
have got...
telling your family that your mother is
exactly
versus your mother is institutionalized for something horrible that happened.
Yeah, totally.
So how was writing this different than your other books?
Oh, this was entirely different because it started in a really strange way in that I had gone away for a night in a posh hotel with the producers of Behind Her Eyes. And we were like, oh, let's make something else. And I said, well, I've got this idea for a book, blah, blah, blah. And so we started to chat about women and life and all. We have all very different backgrounds. Like Jess, the producer, has she's just turned 40. She's got two kids. Her husband stays at home most of the time. Don't know where I get my ideas from. And the other producer was older, single mom. And we were all talking about female guilt, basically, and how a man can go to work and miss a parent's evening. And everyone goes, oh, that's all right, he's earning a living. But if the woman's a breadwinner and she misses a parent's evening, it's still like, oh no, the worst mother in the world, you know? So we were chatting about all this stuff. And I said, well, I've got this idea. And I had like the twist and everything kind of sorted out. And so the plan originally was to write the TV and the book at the same time, which I will never try to do again. It was so hard because you know, you're writing episode one and then you're getting notes on episode one. And it reached a point where I had to say, let me write the book because this is quite a complex story. And it was very, it changed massively. So I was very lucky in that a lot of this book came out of having written episode one so many times before I started writing the book. And then I put the TV aside, wrote the book, and now we're back on the TV of it. So it was, I found it quite a hard write, I think, because I spent so much time playing with the script before I started the book. It didn't feel like it was mine for a little while. And that I realized was quite important. Like I'm quite, as you can tell, I'm quite a gregarious personality and I'll chat away about everything. But I'm actually, when it comes to work, quite private. And I like to sit down with, I don't find it easy to talk about my work. I'm not on Twitter going, oh my God, this is a paragraph from my latest work. Isn't it amazing? You know, I'm not one of those writers. So having shared it so much before I started writing it, I found it hard to start. But once I was into it, it was okay. But it was a tough write. And I think pandemic and everything as well doesn't help, does it?
No, not at all. And I'm very excited to hear that this is going to be TV as well. Oh,
fingers crossed, yeah.
I mean, when Behind Her Eyes came out, it was so huge and people were so excited about it. So I can't imagine that this wouldn't work as well.
Well,
but
that's
very cool.
And we have woven, I mean, in the end, the final chapter in this book, I don't know if you noticed, there's a little secret coda for the Behind Her Eyes fans.
Yes.
In the final chapter. So there's little clues for what happened next there. Although the two stories are obviously very separate. So we're hoping that we might do three, because I've also got ideas for where that ending would go from the end of this one in with the characters of Behind Her Eyes. So it could end up being kind of a weird, crazy trilogy.
I like that. I think that's really exciting. And I like that, you know, you're saying, so you had a lot of connection then with the producers of Behind Her Eyes. So were you very much involved in that?
I wasn't actually too hands-on, because I'm a great believer in once you sell the rights, you know, I mean, because I do screenwriting and I'm adapting a book for another author who's being great and not too involved, but I would find it tricky if the author was sitting my shoulder, especially if you had someone who was like Steve Lightfoot, who did Behind Her Eyes, great screenwriter. I'm not going to give him notes. He's a better screenwriter than me. And there's a whole team for that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't very hands-on. I went to the read through and I went on set, but I just got on really well with the producers. So I think it was just, we just felt it was natural to try and come up with something else together. You know, we just, so much of this is how well you get on with people and, you know, and it was nice to have like a female team, you know, so it was good.
So what other books to TV are some of your favorites? You don't have to name them all, but
I've watched
a lot because TV
is so tricky, isn't it? Because I often, and it's awful to say this because so many people watch Behind Her Eyes and I was so glad, but if I've read a book and loved it, I'm very wary of watching an adaptation. Like, really? I love The Passage.
Okay.
So I was scared of watching the adaptation of The Passage.
Right.
Game of Thrones books, I thought were great. I thought that was great adaptation. Gone Girl, I thought was really good.
Yeah.
God, there's so many, aren't there? What else has been?
The You series by Carolyn Kepnes.
I love that. Yes, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, there's just so much, I think, that you can do with something episodic. You know, I remember for years people would get excited about books being adapted into movies and then like start complaining about it, and you know, there are better adaptations, and I am certainly not immune from complaining about ones that I think did not
go
allowed
to do it
totally. But at the same time, I've noticed now with television, it's just so much easier to really get into the story. It's just almost like a better medium because you don't have to wait to, you know, worry about fitting it into a 2 hour
period. An hour and a half. Yeah. I mean, when I was at the start of the process of selling the rights to Behind Her Eyes, it was still the cusp of that television revival. And I wanted to sell it to film until I met Left Bank. And then I was like, I want to sell it to television through them. But it was still very much television was the lesser game. You know, people always wanted the film. Whereas now, I mean, I think a short story or a novella is a great movie premise. A book, you've got to leave so much out to make it an hour and a half. You've got to strip back the story so much. I mean, Gone Girl did well to get it in, but it was pacey,
right?
Whereas with, you know, even four parters on TV, or six, or is a really good length. 10 is stretching a book, but unless it's a massive book. But yeah, I think TV has really revived the novel adaptation.
Agreed. So is there anything you can say about anything that you're working on now, or is it strictly under wraps?
Well, I'm only just starting planning a new book, which will be slight. It'll be a crime novel, but a slightly different direction, less psych thriller. You know, it still will have some strange elements in it, a little bit of weird in there, as I like to do. I'm writing the adaptation of a book I wrote called The Death House, which we're hoping to film next year. Dead to Her is in development with Amazon, but I'm not writing that. I've got a couple of other writing projects on the go for TV, but yeah, I mean, mainly I'm just looking forward to starting the new book. I was writing something else and I left it after about 20,000 words. I just thought, no, this isn't gonna work.
Is that hard?
Which I don't do very often.
Yeah, I was gonna ask
before I've done it. Yeah it was just and I also just realized that I'm not very good at writing the same book over and over. And I don't mean that in a derogatory. I shouldn't say the same book, the same style of book over and over and over. You know, my back catalogue is horror, sci-fi, fantasy, fairy tales, all sorts of things. So I find it hard to stay in one lane. And I just wanted to try something different, you know. So I'm going to give something slightly different a go. But I think it should hopefully still got crime in it. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, this was very exciting. I do hope that you'll come back and talk to us about something else.
I would love to, anytime. You bring your coffee, I'll bring my tea. We'll bring a Absolutely. Donut each.
Yeah. Yeah. So really quickly, so I think I mentioned earlier, the cover is so scary.
Isn't it amazing?
Do you have any input in that?
No. Do you know, normally, because American covers and English covers are so different, that normally we love the English covers and we hate the American covers. That American authors have the other way around because you know, it's what you're used to seeing in the stores. So normally we have a lot of debate about the covers. And when William Morrow sent that cover through, me and my agent were just like, yeah, we love it. That's it, done. Love
yeah.
It. And yeah, it's very different to the English cover, but I love them both. And I think it's quite sexy. It's quite evocative. It looks quite creepy. It's super creepy. I really like it. I'm really excited by it. I can't wait to see the finished version.
Well, thank you so much. This was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest today was
Sarah Pimborough.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.